Welcome to the KMUD Weekend News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we have in-depth coverage on the mysterious white substance in Redwood Creek, the new Humboldt Bay Area plan, and later on, the KMUD News Sports Report. But up first, a quick rundown of local headlines. This is KMUD News. In Humboldt News, Crystal Fennell, a 6th to 8th grade English language arts teacher at Stanwood A. Murphy Elementary School in the Scotia Union School District, has been named the 2026 to 2027 Humboldt County Teacher of the Year by the Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Michael Davies Hughes. Fennell, who has been teaching 13 years, was one of five educators honored by the Humboldt County Office of Education with the Excellence in Teaching Award in May. The Excellence in Teaching Award recognizes classroom teachers from transitional kindergarten through 12th grade who have been identified as exemplary by their colleagues, students, or school communities. Honorees must have a minimum of 5 years teaching experience. Amy Gosson, superintendent and principal of the Scotia School District, was thrilled to see Fennell honored with the award. Quote, "What truly sets Crystal apart is her genuine passion for teaching and learning. She approaches her work with enthusiasm, creativity, and a genuine desire to make a positive impact on the lives of her students. Crystal goes far beyond merely impacting knowledge. She instills a love of learning that extends far beyond the classroom." As the Humboldt County Teacher of the Year, Fennell now has an opportunity to be considered for the California State Teacher of the Year, traditionally announced in October. For more information regarding awards programs, visit hcoe.org/awards. In Eureka, the organizers of the Eureka Street Art Festival are excited to announce a new project, the Eureka Murals Audio Tour. This self-guided tour includes 24 audio segments explaining the inspiration and stories behind some of Eureka's lovely murals. You can access the tour map at eurekastreetartfestival.com to see locations of the tour. At each of the included murals, you will find a QR code. To access the audio tour, simply scan the QR code using your phone's camera, then tap the pop-up link that appears. Programs will be available for visitors and residents at the Eureka Visitor Center in Old Town. In Mendocino, Mendocino County Assessor, County Clerk Recorder, Katrina Bartolome, announced that as with every other election, there are many ballots left to be processed and counted as part of the official canvas. Since Monday, June 1st, the elections office has received over 15,000 ballots. The elections office is required to count ballots that are received at polling locations and in official drop boxes throughout the county by 8 p.m. on Election Day, and ballots that are postmarked by Election Day and received within 7 days of Election Day. Mendocino County has 17,720 countywide ballots left to process. This includes 580 provisional/conditional ballots to review and process. As for the highly watched supervisor races, in the 5th Supervisor District, the county has 4,216 ballots left to count. Measure A, in the Mendocino Lake Community College District, has 16,853 ballots left to count. And next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. A mysterious white substance spilled into Redwood Creek this week that made its way into the South Fork of the Eel River has likely been identified, KMUD News reports. This week, a mysterious white substance was found in southern Humboldt's Redwood Creek, which then spilled into the South Fork of the Eel River. Much speculation has followed, both on social media and via calls to KMUD News by concerned citizens. We want to make clear that we do not officially know the substance's composition. KMUD News and our network of reporters reached out to California Fish and Wildlife and the North Coast Water Quality Board, among others, and both agencies are actively investigating the issue. Right before this broadcast, Peter Tira, information officer for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, sent the following statement. Quote, "The material is believed to be a bentonite, water, rock, sand, clay mixture from drilling activity nearby, which has since ceased. The situation remains under investigation, and CDFW's environmental science staff is now checking on any impacts to fish and other species. Bentonite is a natural clay commonly used to help seal ponds on properties, among other uses, like in water-based drilling mud. It is not toxic, but poses a grave threat to local river systems and wildlife when spilled in large amounts. We spoke with scientist Patrick Higgins to learn more. Patrick has previously published research on bentonite contamination resulting from a spill into a creek in the early 1990s.
This is Pat Higgins, and I have been a consulting fisheries biologist for 30 years, and I also run the Eel River Recovery Project, but I'm just talking to Kema today as a scientist with knowledge of how bentonite clay impacts aquatic ecosystems.
Yeah, so I'd love to just know a little bit more about what bentonite can do to river systems, and specifically any impacts it might have on fish and other animal life in our local area here.
Bentonite clay is often used for drilling muds. It can also be used to line ponds. So there's bentonite clay in the watershed where ponds are sealed all over the place. When it gets loose into the aquatic ecosystem, it first clouds the water with a gray color because it's very fine clay, and so that's what's called colloidal dispersion, and you see the white color, and that'll stay suspended for a long ways. The damage comes, and that can prevent a steelhead and coho salmon that are migrating downstream right now from feeding. And so that's an immediate impact on fish. And then if it precipitates out on the bottom, it's kind of like toothpaste. And so we don't see them, but the entire bottom of the stream and the cracks between the rocks, that's where the aquatic insects live that are a large part of the food chain for the fish. So the bentonite basically shuts down macroinvertebrate production, in science speak, and therefore not only can the fish not eat lunch when it's cloudy, but then there's nothing to eat if the bentonite coated the stream beyond that until those gravels are flushed with winter flows. I studied the question of bentonite pollution at a very significant scale in the Garcia River watershed when AT&T was drilling for cables that would go undersea for offshore telecommunications, and they used bentonite clay, and it came up in a little creek tributary to the Garcia in what they call fracking, and it flowed down like toothpaste and coated the bottom of the little creek and also the Garcia River below. And they did it in another basin adjacent called Moat Creek. And so I studied the effects of the bentonite, and the aquatic invertebrates downstream were almost nil. Those things that have high pollution index and like beetles that can just swim away and are not obligate to the stream bottom. And so the damage on the Garcia to the fish in the river was considerable, and AT&T paid damages on that.
Patrick Higgins also speculated on the evidence seen so far from the substance spilled into Redwood Creek.
The white, cloudy water that moved down Redwood Creek and into the South Fork, from what I understand, is consistent with a bentonite spill. People do not have to be worried about it as being a toxic substance, because it's not, it's inert, but it is injurious to the aquatic ecosystem, and so it's a violation of the Clean Water Act and what's known as the North Coast Regional Board's Basin Plan, and the Basin Plan protects fish and cold water beneficial uses, and when things like this substance enter public waters like Redwood Creek and the South Fork, it's definitely not consistent with the Basin Plan, and it's in violation of the Basin Plan.
while Patrick Higgins, like KMUD News and California's Department of Fish and Wildlife, is suspicious of the white substance spilled in Redwood Creek being bentonite, we want to reemphasize that there is no official confirmation from participating agencies on this issue. We will continue to track this and will bring you official confirmation of what the substance is when testing is published. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Humboldt County is in the process of updating the Humboldt Bay Area Plan. We spoke with Director of the Humboldt County Planning and Building Department, John Ford, to learn more. KMUD News reports. John Ford is the director of the Humboldt Planning and Building Department. Recently, the department released a first draft of the updated Humboldt Bay Area Plan, which hasn't been overhauled to this extent in over 40 years. KMUD News interviewed Humboldt Planning and Building Department Director John Ford to learn more about what the proposed updates to the Humboldt Bay Area Plan could mean for the future of development and coastal protection in the Humboldt Bay Area. To start off, I'd love to know more about the, you know, importance historically of the Humboldt Bay Area Plan and how has it directly impacted the Humboldt Planning and Building Department?
Well, the Humboldt Bay Area Plan is one of, I think, six area plans that we have that regulate land use in the coastal zone. This affects the coastal area around Humboldt Bay. Now, obviously, Humboldt Bay has been traditionally a really important area for the county from a job creation, from an employment standpoint, from a economic standpoint. There's been a lot of people that work there. There's been a lot of things going on. Over time, when this plan was originally done back in the 1980s, you know, the pulp mills were in full operation and there was a lot of people that were working out on the small peninsula. As time has gone by, not much has really changed around the north end of the bay. There's a little bit more development down around Humboldt Hill in that area. But overall, probably the biggest focus is the small peninsula. The plan, as I mentioned, was written back in, I believe it was 1983 when it was certified, so it's over 40 years old. So there's a lot of things that we're dealing with now that were far, far different. And some of those include sea level rise, tsunami awareness, even wildfire affects this plan a little bit. The pulp mills are obviously no longer there, and what does the peninsula look like in terms of supporting different kinds of coastal-dependent industrial uses? Aquaculture is certainly something that has taken hold in the Humboldt Bay a little bit, but now there's the possibility of offshore wind and having some kind of heavy lift terminal for offshore wind. Some of the other things we want to address is really update the understanding that the bay has been historically and even prehistorically important. The Native American people that lived here before the Europeans arrived lived and did commerce around Humboldt Bay, even though it was via trading, and access was by canoe. The island Tulawat in the middle of the bay is a very sacred site. And so the bay has always been important to this region.
I kind of want to touch on two points from what you just said. One, I'd love to know just a little more detail on what specifically was changed in the plan to account for changes on the Samoa Peninsula.
In terms of the Samoa Peninsula, we're looking at a couple things. One, there's been some changes to the Coastal Act, and so we're trying to modify the plan to reflect that. Some of those had to do with the fact that oil and supporting offshore oil and gas is not considered a coastal-dependent industrial use, and a lot of the land along the Samoa Peninsula is coastal dependent industrial. Some of the coastal dependent industrial that's there really is inappropriately identified as coastal dependent industrial. And so we're really looking at what is a more appropriate land use there, whether it be, you know, coastal, commercial recreation, or some other use.
And then in terms of, and you mentioned it a little bit, but I noticed in the reading through the planning or the current draft of the planning document, I noticed environmental and social justice played a large part. How could adding those concerns change future development as opposed to if the old plan, let's say, just stayed in use?
Well, for instance, it's like, what do you do with existing housing that is, you know, maybe not the so-called affordable housing, but is housing that is more affordable to workforce income people? So, and what do you do with those houses if they're being impacted by sea level rise, tsunami run up, king high tides, things that we saw in king salmon last year? So wanting to be sensitive to the fact that these people are being adversely affected. Correspondingly, one of the changes that's incorporated in there is where you have housing, is that, and you may have housing that's affordable and it's regulated as affordable housing, that, you know, if it's being given density bonuses and other things, that the access to the coast for people living in that housing needs to be there, and that they need to be given the same access opportunities as other people. So it's just really ensuring that everybody gets equal and fair treatment.
And then a more specific question about the document I had. In the section on shoreline protection structures, there's an addition of nature-based adaptation strategies alongside, you know, more traditional structures like seawalls. What are some examples of nature-based adaptation strategies, and what could that possibly, you know, maybe look like for the Humboldt Bay Area?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because one of the things that is getting a lot more attention are nature-based solutions, where maybe you put in some kind of a natural environment, whether it be eelgrass or something else to kind of build up the ground around the edge of the bay, so that you're not losing whatever protection is there, or rather than just putting in a big rock revetment, you know, trying to create some other kind of natural barrier that includes marine life, marine vegetation, and things like that, that are able to be sustainable in the long term, and are kind of natural to a bay environment, which increases the value of the habitat.
And then the last question I had, is there anything else about the updates or proposed updates to the Humboldt Bay Area Plan that you'd like to share with the public, or just anything else that folks should know about this process?
I think the important thing is process right now. I mean, we did want to get this out as an early draft to allow people to really give comments on it and ask questions and express concerns, because we are going to go into a process of workshops and then hearings that will go through the rest of the year. So this is just an early stage, and really want to invite people to participate.
If you would like to learn more about the proposed updates to the Humboldt Bay Area Plan, you can go to the Humboldt County website for more details, and for the PDF of the first draft of proposed updates. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Up next is the KMUD News Sports Report with Ray Hamill.
The 2026 Humboldt Crabs season got off to an exciting start this week as they faced off against the Humboldt Eagles 19U American Legion team in a thriller played in front of a packed house at the Arcata Ballpark. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have much more on the Crabs opening week in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest American Legion baseball news, how two local standouts fared at the track and field high school state championships, news of where several local high school seniors will be taking their talents after graduation, why it was a good week for Cal Poly Humboldt Sports, and who won this year's District Junior League and Senior League Tournament of Champions. But first up, it was a good opening week for the Humboldt Crabs. The local collegiate summer baseball team got the season off to a flying start with a weekend sweep of the Novato Knicks before winning a thriller against the Humboldt Eagles American Legion 19U team on a walk-off on Wednesday night. With several local pitchers playing a key role, the Crabs kicked off the summer campaign with three wins over the Knicks last weekend. The Crabs took Game 1 13-0 on Friday night before winning 12-1 on Saturday night and 14-6 on Sunday afternoon. Three local pitchers featured on the mound in Friday's win, combining to carry a no-hitter into the eighth inning. Former St. Bernard standout Aiden Dorsch took the mound for the opener and was outstanding through six innings, with Arcata's Ben Lukens and McKinleyville's Jackson Kelly also pitching in relief. Fortuna's Cody Collins got the start in Saturday's game and also impressed. Damian Casas also had a big week for the Crabs, hitting the team's first home run of the summer on Sunday and following that with a walk-off base hit to secure a thrilling 6-5 come-from-behind win over the Eagles. Playing in front of a packed house, the best two baseball teams in the county served up a highly entertaining showdown on Wednesday. In a game that saw the lead switch hands multiple times, a young Eagles team that features mostly high school players from around the county gave the more experienced Crabs players, many of whom play at the Division I collegiate level, all they could handle. The Eagles led 5-4 going into the bottom of the ninth inning, but the Crabs would rally to score two runs to keep their unbeaten start to the season intact. The Crabs will be back in action at the Arcata Ballpark on Friday night when they open a three-game weekend series against the South Bay Storm. The two clubs will also play on Saturday night at 6:30 before concluding their weekend series on Sunday afternoon with first pitch set for 12:30 p.m. The Eagles will have a two-week break between games before hosting the Southern Humboldt 76ers at Bilotti Field in Eureka on June 16th. In other American Legion action this week, the Northern Humboldt Giants opened their summer season against the Humboldt Eagles in a 17U matchup at Arcata High on Tuesday evening, with the Giants prevailing 3-2. Arcata's Tanner Keyes led the way for the Giants, finishing 2-for-2 with a home run and three stolen bases. Switching gears in local high school track and field, it was a memorable week for a pair of HDNL athletes. Seniors Skylar Collenberg of Arcata and Sebastian Espinoza of Del Norte represented the league at the CIF State Championships in Clovis, with Collenberg closing out a record-breaking spring by placing sixth in the shot put. Collenberg, who holds school records in both the shot put and discus, as well as the HDNL record in the shot put, also placed 13th in the discus at the state meet, while Espinoza finished 19th in the shot put. It was also a week to remember for Cal Poly Humboldt Sports. The university's women's rowing team traveled to Lake Lanier Olympic Park in Georgia over the weekend and earned a national runner-up finish at the NCAA Division II Championships. The good news for the Jacks continued on Thursday when they found out they had placed fourth out of 12 conference teams in the race for this year's CCAA Commissioner's Cup, which goes to the most successful athletic department in conference for the school year. With strong showings from multiple of their sports teams, the fourth place finish ties the highest placing in Jack's department history, matching the program's previous best finish from the 2014-15 academic year. The fourth place finish is also just the third top five finish in department history. This year's Commissioner's Cup was won by Cal Poly Pomona. In other local sports news this week, several seniors from around the HDNL announced where they will be taking their talents after graduation. Last Friday, five Eureka seniors signed their letters of intent to continue their playing careers at the collegiate level, including three who will be competing for College of the Redwoods. The group of athletes moving on includes baseball standout Ty Crawford, who will play for Santa Rosa JC, as well as basketball standout Owen Hiscox, who is taking his talents to El Camino College in Torrance. Bryson Mismash, Sergio Calderon, and Madalus Martinez will also stay close to home and compete for CR. Mismash will play football for the local community college, while Calderon will play soccer and Martinez will compete in track and field. Four St. Bernard's seniors have also committed to CR, including three who will play football. Edge defenders Colton Hall and Jasiri Bailey, who combined for 35 and a half sacks as seniors, have committed to head coach Jason White's team, along with playmaker Karan Devlin, who was a standout receiver, cornerback and kick returner for the Crusaders. Hall will also compete in track and field for the local community college. Another St. Bernard's senior, Carson Costa, also recently announced that he will play basketball for the CR men's team. Arcata senior Nora Brumbaugh also signed her letter of intent this week and will continue her volleyball career at Sierra College after graduation this month. In local youth baseball, meanwhile, a busy month of postseason tournaments got underway this week. The District Junior League and Senior League Tournaments of Champions took place at various locations around the county, with both championship games played at the Arcata Ballpark on Monday night. The Junior League final got the night started, with Southern Humboldt defeating Klamath Trinity before McKinleyville's New Wave Realty defeated the Eel River Batsmen 9-3 in the Senior League final. And that's this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Biana Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.